one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, not a great weekend for the Phillies in Kansas City. They get their doors blown off on Monday in the series finale, and the Phillies lose a series. It's rare that this happens under Don Mattingly, but it does happen. But it was ugly on Monday in the series finale. Christopher Sanchez, not a great outing in his second-to-last start before a possible All-Star game start. But we'll talk about whether or not his performance on Monday has threatened his possible chances of starting in the All-Star game. We'll talk about the Kyle Schwarber ejection. We'll have a frank conversation about the future of Trey Turner and where he's going to play, maybe even as soon as this year. And then we'll talk about the All-Stars. Yes, five Phillies were named to the National League All-Star team. And I think there actually one more may actually make the team if things happen here over the next few days. And we'll just see about that. But we have a roundtable edition of Hittin' Season for you. We apologize. We weren't able to all three of us get together last week and give you a roundtable with Justin, Liz, and myself. But we are here now. And we're here to set you up for this final week of the first half of the season leading into the All-Star break at Citizens Bank Park next week. Justin Clue, Liz Rocher are here. Liz Rocher, of course, is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how was your weekend? How was your fourth?
Things were lovely and low-key. We stayed indoors, watched a lot of soccer, and I have a question.
Oh, okay.
When did the advertising world decide that we, America, need to see so much David Beckham? He is in at least three commercials for three different brands, I believe. Mm. And there are at least two to three different commercials for each of those brands. I am so tired of seeing his face and hearing his stupid voice. I had to mention it because we were watching soccer before we came up here. Good job, United States, by the way.
Looking
and
ugly.
It was just like being accosted by David Beckham on a nightly basis. Like,
well, I'm going to turn this over.
It's not ours. Like, I want it's just like James Corden. Like, listen, we were able to get rid of James Corden. The UK didn't want him back, but we sent him away anyway. Why? Why does he have to be the one that comes next? Can't we send him away too?
Justin Clue, from Baseball Prospectus, I'm going to throw this your way first. David Beckham, yay or nay? Where are you on the David Beckham? I honestly think most Americans don't know who David Beckham is. I really don't. I don't think most Americans could pick him out of a lineup.
There was a time when the idea of being accosted by David Beckham on a nightly basis would be very appealing to large amounts of Americans.
To most of the women
of
America.
This actually is kind of a pivot, as far as I know, because I am not super plugged into soccer culture. That being said, I guess there are worse 70-year-olds to see on television at this point in time. I don't know how what is his age.
That's a little old, I think, for him. I'm going to guess he's in his late 40s.
Sorry, David. Wow. Okay. Yikes.
It's a little, you're up. With, yeah.
Need a little bit of that blood oxygenation, I guess.
I mean, remember, he married a Spice Girl, so he can't be that old, right? I mean, it's just, yeah.
I think we're forgetting how long ago the Spice Girls were.
It might have been.
It was yesterday. You shut your mouth.
Felt like yesterday to me.
I will not hear anything.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and we're going to get to the Phillies in a second. I have invested absolutely zero in this World Cup, and especially in Team USA. I have not been able to bring myself to care. I haven't cared about any of the other World Cups, any of the other Team USAs in the World Cups, because I feel like this is just how it's always going to be. They're always going to get past that opening round. They're always going to win that first game, and then they're always going to lose it against a good European team or a good South American team. And, you know, we don't care about this sport for the most part until every 4 years when the World Cup rolls around. And I know there's Major League Soccer fans. I know many of you listening to this podcast are probably fans of the Union. And I get that, you know, everybody's kid plays soccer, but It's just not, I can't get into it. I have absolutely nothing emotionally invested in Team USA in the World Cup. Nothing.
I thought we had it this year. I thought the whole point was that FIFA, which, correct me if I'm wrong, the most corrupt sports body on this planet.
The NCAA is giving it a run for its money, but yeah, FIFA's pretty close. Yeah.
The International Olympic Committee is also.
No, yeah, that also
FIFA's
is pretty good.
Pretty up there.
Yeah. I feel like it would align pretty well with, I don't know, certain other deeply corrupt bodies that have openly admitted to changing things in the World Cup. I kind of thought we had it in the back, totally aligned as far as, like, you know, let's call them intangibles go.
Sure.
With soccer and performing in the World Cup. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised it kind of got to this point. Every time Belgium scored tonight, I was like, oh, well, this will get waved off, or this will get fixed somehow. But mm-hmm. apparently there are limits even to corruption, which is even more depressing somehow.
Yeah.
And those limits are the talent of the United States men's soccer team.
Yeah.
their faults outpace even the corruption.
Even the most rampant bodies. Corruption that we as Americans can possibly come up with. There's only
Seemed
so
impossible.
Much we can do.
As but only we did, folks.
Yeah. That's they right. They got a gimme in that overturn, and they got their butts kicked, absolutely smashed by Belgium, which I don't believe even has a government right now, from what I was reading. And they yet, however, they are less embarrassing than we are.
Well, I don't know that anything, and this is going to be, again, another professional segue into the show. Nothing could be
See
less embarrassing. You, beautifully done.
Setting
me
up.
Teeing me up on the, got it. And I knocked this one 500 feet to dead left field here. Nothing more embarrassing.
That's called a pass, little soccer term for you.
Thank you. A pass into, and I got the open net goal here. That's right. I'm sorry, everyone. But no, the Phillies.
I'm running and kicking. Is there a word for that?
Soccer. Okay.
The Phillies did their own Team USA impersonation on Monday in Kansas City, somehow racking up a 15-1 loss with Christopher Sanchez on the mound starting that game. I mean, in soccer, a 3-1 loss is about the same as a 15-1 loss in baseball, right? If I'm kind of doing the math, I'm extrapolating, you know, goals and runs scored, and it's basically this. It's like a 5-1 ratio. Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, but I feel like this is the equivalent. Somehow the Phillies gave up a run in every single inning of the game. On Monday, they did, seriously, the Royals scored in every eight innings that they came to the plate. It's the first time in more than 100 years the Phillies have given up a run in every inning of a baseball game. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's hard to do.
Oh my God.
Christopher Sanchez had the worst start of his career. Ooh. Just absolutely did not have it in Kansas City, continuing some road issues for him. We'll get to that in just a second. 3 1/3 innings for him on Monday, 12 hits. In 3 1/3 innings, 9 earned runs, 1 walk, 1 strikeout, 3 home runs allowed, 2 of them on his changeup, which was not fooling anyone on Monday. He started the day with an ERA of 2. It finished 2.62. So his ERA jumped 0.62 earned runs. ERAs, whatever the terminology would be there. Yes, I'm a professional baseball podcaster. It is his final start before the All-Star. No, he'll have one more start before the All-Star break on Saturday in Detroit. But over in 2 of his last 3 starts, both road starts, he's allowed 14 runs in 8 1/3 innings in his last 2 road starts. And beyond that, in his last 3 road starts, he's allowed 18 runs in 14 innings of work. So a disconcerting start from Christopher Sanchez, because he was brilliant against the Pirates at home at Citizens Bank Park, and that's been kind of the thing for him this year. He has been a little bit rocky on the road, but he's been unbelievable at home. I guess, Justin, the thing I was thinking about as Christopher Sanchez was blowing up, first of all, I thought Don Mattingly left him in too long. I mean, I realized that, you know, you only have so many bullpen arms and you've got a number of days in a row here until the All-Star breaks. But man, asking Christopher Sanchez to wear it for this game on Monday just didn't feel great to me. So I guess the big question and the thing that I was wondering as I watched Christopher Sanchez here on Monday was, Did he cost himself a chance to start in the All-Star game? That's been the big question, Justin, is and it certainly looked like he was on track to be named the starter with it looked like Jacob Mizorowski is going to pitch on Sunday, so I don't think it means he's going to be eligible to pitch in the All-Star game. Things were lining up for Christopher Sanchez. Has he hurt his chances to start in the All-Star game, or is the fact it's in Philadelphia and the fact that he's had the season he's had, does it still feel like it's more likely than not?
No, I think he definitely hurt his chances. I think that's definitely it's the kind of it's not an arbitrary honor. But it's not an award. It typically means a lot to a guy, especially a guy getting the nod for the first time. But ultimately, the people who make these decisions, yeah, they're going to watch a game like that, and they're not going to be out on Sanchez as an ace, but they're going to think, okay, maybe this is a guy who isn't starting the All-Star game, especially since the last time Jacob Mizorowski pitched against the Phillies was the last time we had a conversation like this in which the Phillies lost a game in this fashion where it felt like you just kind of had to wait for the other team to decide they were done beating them, but at no point did the Phillies actually look like they were going to win or come back in the ball game. And then, like, Mizorowski specifically striking out 15 Phillies when he pitched them and making Major League Baseball history. Yeah. I think that's a 1-2 punch that says, hey, okay, maybe Sanchez isn't the first guy who pitches in the All-Star game, even though it is in Philadelphia. I've had pretty strong feelings about this, but I can see, like in my mind, yeah, I mean, the fact that it's in Philadelphia gives you that boost, but I don't think a lot of other people are going to see it that way. I think the people who make these decisions, they see a start like that, and they use it as a determining factor between two great pitchers. Because, again, nobody's out on him being an All-Star, but, yeah, maybe he doesn't get the honor of starting because he had the worst game of his career right before the All-Star game.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, Liz, it's awful timing as much as anything else. I mean, just Yeah, it's a shame. And if he'd gotten out of the game earlier, you know, maybe a little bit of damage is saved there. But I get, at the end of the day, a 2.62 ERA is still a pretty gosh darn good ERA, and he had the scoreless inning streak. It is happening. I mean, I still think he gets it, but I think you could make the argument now if you're looking at the numbers that there are National League starters that are probably more deserving. There are guys who have not had blow up games like Christopher Sanchez just had on Monday.
True, but the last time I checked, this wasn't the Cy Young race, and so I actually feel like he still has it locked up. He had that scoreless inning streak, which was enormous, and actually had all of baseball engaged for a while. You know, just because he's had a couple of blow-up games, and granted, they have been gross. They have not looked good.
Yeah.
But he has the record to support going first. And last time I checked, none of the other pitchers who could start are part of the Philadelphia Phillies. The team hosting the All-Star game for the first time in 30 years, and likely for the last time until we hit another milestone.
Yeah, our 300th. Everybody's looking forward to that.
Oh, aren't we all?
2076 is right around the corner, gang. I mean, I think he's
so old.
I know. I think he's probably still the favorite. I agree with you guys, and I think he'll get one more start on Saturday in Detroit against the Tigers. And if he pitches well in that game, you know, brings the ERA down a little bit. I mean, if he has a signature Christopher Sanchez game, then all of this is kind of moot. If he has another bad game, though, I think it opens the door to someone else. I really do. And I don't like that. I hate that idea. I'm just kind of looking at some of the other names on the list here I don't actually have the National League All-Star pitchers listed in front of me. I should probably pull that up. But I think that he's earned it to this point, but I do wonder, I do worry that, you know, he could do something next week and mess it up. But I think it's more likely than not that he will pitch well and bring the ERA down and he'll be fine. But it's just terrible, just awful timing. And I really wish Don Mattingly had gotten him out of the game a little bit earlier.
It did feel like he was kind of out
really
there
still
longer than he should have been. I feel like Don Mattingly's more questionable bullpen movements are a little more transparent or clear, I think, than Rob Thompson's were. Where Thompson, you'd look back and be like, I don't like this like trend that I see from Thompson, or like, there he goes again doing that thing. Mattingly, you're just like, well, somebody's got to step in here, right? Like, this is somebody's job, right?
Yeah.
Like, I get he's trying to protect the bullpen that gets, like, a ton, you know, more use than it probably should from guys who shouldn't be as exposed as they are. But, you know, when you have a middle bullpen outside of Duran, I guess Kirkering, that you don't super trust, it's kind of like you're saving a wrapped gift in your closet, but then you open it months later and it's just cat litter. And you're like, well, this isn't fun. Why do we want this?
Yeah. It's like fresh cookies that someone gifted you, and now they're moldy and dangerous.
I don't even have a cat. Why is this here?
Why is this mine? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you've got, like, Chris Sale, who's got a 2.10 ERA. Chase Burns of the Reds has a 2.40 ERA. Both those guys are pitching real. And if Mizorowski was, I think here's the thing, if Mizorowski was eligible, or if he does end up being eligible, like, say his start gets rained out, this weekend, and he's back in play, then there's a conversation to be had there, as to whether or not Mizorowski should get the start. But I know Mizorowski himself said he thought it would be cool for Christopher Sanchez to get the start. It seems to me maybe he would even say it's his home ballpark. That's kind of what he was saying in his quotes
exactly.
that I saw.
None of the players want to start instead of Christopher Sanchez.
What? Yeah.
I mean, Mizorowski is the guy who would be most likely to start in his place, and even he's like, I don't think so. I don't want to do that. There's no, why would they cheer at all for me? That's
because,
the thing. Like, if you're doing it at a ballpark where they want Christopher Sanchez, you're not going to give it to them. You're stupid.
Baseball's very good at not giving us what we want.
That's true. That's true.
I know.
Especially as Philly fans.
Mizorowski particularly gave us what we didn't want, which was Mizorowski on the roster instead of Sanchez last year.
Right. That's
That is cool. That's cool of him to say that. It also just gives you an idea, like, how to gauge how these guys look at it. Like, do both Mizorowski and Sanchez want to do it? Yeah. Is it at its core an exhibition game? Yes. Like, are there bigger honors? Of course. But is this one too? Oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
And Mizorowski gets it, where he's like, yeah. And because of that sort of novelty aspect to it, it probably does make more sense for him to start, Sanchez to start at home in front of his own fans, because that's ultimately what this is all for. And that makes that's cool of him to say, and that makes a lot of sense. It does. But yeah. One more blown up start, and I mean, you know, the pain in the butt part is that you're going to have to wind up defending that decision, even if you default to, well, whatever, Sanchez is just going to start it, even after he, like, stumbles through his next start, if that happens. You're just going to wind up having to defend it against, like, all-star game purists, which are up there with, like, Cooperstown zealots. The most relentless and ceaselessly annoying people.
Joyless.
Who watch baseball.
I hate those people. Like, it's an exhibition game, kids.
Let's
all take it down.
I think the other thing that about this performance on Monday too is that it may not have even needed to happen like this, because in the first inning, Trey Turner commits a throwing error on what would have been an inning-ending double play. Bryson Stott feeds him at second base for the second out, and Turner throws the ball away. He was charged with an error on the throw, but it was not because he did not get the runner out at first base, because you cannot assume the double play. So that's why all of the runs in the first inning were charged to Christopher Sanchez. That's why they were earned runs, because it's technically the hitter reached first base on a fielder's choice. So for everybody wondering why all of the runs that came after Trey Turner's throwing error that would have been the third out of the inning, why they were earned, it's because you can't assume the double play. You cannot assume, even if the guy would have been out by 15 feet. And I think this is a rule that Major League Baseball should change. I think it's a rule they should have changed a long time ago. I think you can assume the double play sometimes. We've seen enough baseball to know that's a double play ball. I am assuming a double play here. You can assume the double play. It's not a complicated defensive play for baseball players at the major league level. Can I assume the double play in a 12-year-old league, you know, in my son's league when they get a ground ball to short? Absolutely not. That ball's going five rows up. But it's in major.
I was just going to say, he's going to have to come back on the podcast and defend his honor and the honor of his
team. I'm not
talking
about my son. I'm talking about this kid, Davey. He doesn't know what he's doing out there. Doesn't know what he's doing.
I'm talking about my son, and you cannot prove I said
his,
so.
His transition at second base, it's just, it needs work. But Trey
Do not
Turner.
Rewind the tape.
No. Trey Turner did not make the throw. It led to six runs, and this has obviously been a major problem this year for this team. His 12th error on the season. We're just halfway through the season. So we're getting to a point, and I'm seeing a lot of the writers talking about this as well. How much longer can Trey Turner continue to play shortstop? It seems as though, Liz, we are nearing a breaking point here with Trey Turner running him out there every day to continue to play the worst defensive shortstop in baseball. If you look at the defensive metrics for Fangraphs, and again, I take some of them with a grain of salt, but it matches the eye test. Like, all of the numbers are matching. It matches with the eye test. He looks awful at shortstop. He had a great year defensively last year, but it was sandwiched in between a bunch of terrible years defensively at shortstop. It feels like we're there. It feels like we have reached the point where it's time to send Trey Turner to the outfield. Can you do that in the middle of a season, Liz? Like, is that something that they can, that they have to do at some point, or at least start thinking about it?
I mean, maybe, but I think that's an off-season decision. I mean, also considering how much Trey Turner is being paid, and I mean, that alone, to me, tells me that the Phillies will not do it. He's being paid $27 million every year until 2033. So
yeah, but you can pay an outfield. You can pay your right fielder if he's gonna play like right field. I'm okay with that money if him playing right field or left field or something like that.
I'm just wondering how much. I mean, things are different under Mattingly. You would think so.
Yeah.
You do have to wonder how much rope they're going to give him. But the way the Phillies have conducted themselves as far as their highest paid players, they don't like to do this to them.
No, you're right.
Like, Bryce Harper volunteered to go where he did. And that is the way the Phillies prefer it with their highly paid players. Like, they'll tell Derek Hill where to play, and he'll just go because he does not have a choice. But the big name players, they technically don't have a choice, but they do.
Last week, the question all the reporters were asking was, how much longer can this team start Aaron Nola? And this week, the first headline after his start was, oh, has a corner been turned? Oh,
no, it
we're
hasn't.
Off to a new whole thing. So, you know, every week there's a new unsolvable problem with this team. And as far as I can tell, none of them have actually been solved yet. I'm not saying they shouldn't be. I'm just saying not all of them are going to be. This team is going to have unsolvable problems right through its potential World Series victory. I think you gotta, if you want to start talking to Trey about switching positions in the middle of this year, you can do that. But there's a lot of stuff on this list, man. I don't know how many trade deadline previews you've been reading, but the Phillies have a list that's already too long. And I know we're not talking about acquiring somebody, but we are kind of talking about acquiring somebody because you move Trey and then there's a spot open. And yeah, Bryson Stott maybe, but also, do you want to go hunting for some weak hitting defensive first shortstop who can play that job, play that role as well? I don't know. I actually want to talk about the game itself, because I'm going to actually come to Trey's defense, mostly because if he came to it, he'd throw it into the stands. But I know
yes,
you said all of those runs.
So you're defending him, you say.
All of those runs were earned for Sanchez because it wasn't considered an error. But that's all. Every write up about this game has said, like, yeah, Turner couldn't make the play, and that led to six runs scoring. No. That led to one run
score. I know where you're going, and I'm not gonna. Yeah. I'm gonna let you cook here.
Yeah,
but I'm not absolving Christopher Sanchez of anything.
A lot of people would probably say the same thing, but according to each write up and summary of this game, you would guess that Sanchez is kind of getting a pass for this, which is fair as well because of how well he's pitched. Like, I'm not here to malign Turner or Sanchez specifically. Turner didn't do anything that was surprising, and Sanchez did, but he's got enough goodwill that, like, yeah, you know, nothing. I don't think anything. I think this was just a bad day, and we're all allowed to have a worst day of our career. That was Sanchez today. And yeah, like you said, you know where I'm going with this. Bobby Witt Jr. comes in to score on that play. That's it. The game's tied. That's a bummer. And that Turner's error shouldn't have happened, or his faux error or whatever shouldn't have happened. But he didn't, you know, create the next series of problems. They didn't have six runs score on that one play. Sanchez's high sinker over the plate with a three-ball count let the next run come in. Starling Marte turning on a low and inside sinker. That led to the third run. And then Sanchez's previously unhittable changeup landed on the other side of the wall for the next three Royals runs, not Trey Turner wrenching it out of his hands and chucking it over the fence from the mound. So again, I'm not trying to ding Sanchez more than he deserves to be for this, but ask him. He's the one who said through the interpreter that he pitched like crap today. So, you know, we all, like I said, we all have a worst day of our careers, and Turner, as little as I want to see him make his 13th error at shortstop already, wasn't responsible for all of those runs. So, you know, these are two separate horrible problems, not one large one. Relax, right. Everyone.
That's darn.
Everybody take a breath, for crying out loud. Gee whiz. No, and I agree with that 100%. And I read the NBC Sports Philadelphia write-up, and to their credit, they did say nothing. You can't absolve Christopher Sanchez for getting hit around the way that he did. I think it's the butterfly effect thing, right? You know, it's if Trey Turner makes that play, he gets out of the inning without unscathed, and you know.
Yeah, but I say he gave up 9 earned runs today.
He gave up 12 hits.
The WBC yeah. for breaking for hurting Edwin Diaz, it's like his tendons melted. If it was going to happen, whether he jumped up and down at the WBC or not, same thing goes today. Guy's going to give up 9 earned runs today. That's not because somebody committed an error in the first. It's because he didn't have it today.
Right, but I will say, Liz, that if he makes that play, even if Sanchez gets knocked around a little bit in the second inning, third inning, fourth inning, whatever it is, 6 runs aren't on the board. And this is not, if this was an isolated incident, it would be, you'd give Trey a pass here. But Trey has cost the team with his defense all season long. And not only just in the errors, but his inability. I mean, I don't know what the number is. I don't think there's a statistic that covers this. But the number of times runners are safe at first base on fielder's choices on ground balls that involve Trey Turner is really something else. And he just... I think he's actively hurting them. He's actively defensively hurting them. And maybe you kill two birds with one stone. You know, if you put him in right field or you put him in left field, that's right. Maybe not Trey Turner. The jokes write themselves, friends.
And then you just go on the whole podcast,
right? But I mean, I know, and I'm not a big Edmundo Sosa everyday player fan either, but you do have a shortstop that you can put in the mix there, Liz. Well, I don't know. What do you think about Trey's defense and what to do?
I mean, his defense has been stinky. I mean, there's nothing you can, there's no denying that. And I think two things can be true about today's game. Trey Turner committed a very untimely error, and Christopher Sanchez really sucked. So I don't want to base everything off of this one game, but I feel like moving him right now creates more problems. It just creates, I just think it creates new problems that, I mean, we've got all these problems already. Why create a new one? That's the thing. Like, what is better? The devil you know or the devil you don't?
Sanchez struggling to this level was a problem for today, but Turner's defense is a problem, like you said, that's been a little longer term. I wouldn't mind addressing that, but like we're saying, I feel like it is something you do have to address because it will continue to be a problem. When you get past if nobody's moved or shuffled around, then yeah, you're going to keep having issues with Trey Turner's defense because it's really doesn't seem like it's getting better. But that being said, I mean, you know, What is the other moving him to the outfield, assuming like he wants to do it, or you're down, you know, everybody's on board, still presents its own complications as well, even on the defensive front.
Sure.
Which the Phillies are already an outfield that has struggled defensively in the past and recently. So yeah, it's more about how complicated do you want to try to make things? You know, how many weeks do you want to give him to play in the outfield? You know, or to try it out, just to see if he can do it with some kind of like consistent success. I'm not saying he can't, but it does add another wrinkle to a season where you are very much still trying to put this plane together in the air. And trade deadline is going to be a little revealing about what this team views itself as capable of doing and what they are actually capable of doing. If you want to throw fixing or attempting a fix of some sort at shortstop, so maybe you do see a little more Sosa than before, but not like without making him a full-time player, you know, there's knobs you can turn here and show that you are addressing this pretty significant issue, while also not creating more issues with the kind of ripple effect.
I hear all your I hear all that you're saying. I will also just say as a reminder, Bryce Harper did move to first base in the middle of a season, and it worked out really well. So if Trey Turner can play defense, like if he can learn how to play it, I would probably work on getting that going as soon as possible. But I get what you're saying about creating more problems, and would it create more problems than it solves? So,
I mean, to me, it feels like an end of season Dave Dombrowski surprise, where he suggests this in his end of season press conference, and Trey Turner is completely shocked.
Yeah, he shouldn't be shocked.
All right, just like, well, no, we shouldn't be shocked. Like, he knows his defense is bad, but at the end of the season, it's just like, you ever thinking about moving Trey to the outfield? And he suddenly turns and looks at television like, what? I didn't hear anything about that.
The question might be, how high of a chance do you think there is that this season ends on a Trey Turner throwing error?
No.
It's not zero.
No, I think it's a good chance he loses you a game in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
So how high is that number? And what
Seriously.
Number does it have to be for you to say, let's address this? And I think that's valid.
You know, for a team as good as the Phillies, they got a lot of problems. It's just, we talk a lot about the problems. It's a good team. They just win games, but they got a lot of problems.
Like I said, they had another unsolvable problem last week, and then
He pitched 7 innings. So. He pitched 7 innings on Sunday. Yeah. No, he did.
Sometimes
he did.
You're just living with it. I'm not saying it solved itself because it didn't.
Right.
But sometimes
right.
you just find a way to live with a problem.
Kyle Schwarber got ejected in the sixth inning on a check swing call that he didn't go around on. The third base umpire said he went around, and then he kind of made a little hand waving motion at the third base umpire, and the home plate umpire chucked him. Liz, what you think about the ejection? Warranted? I mean, when a player kind of does that, showing up the umpire a little bit, but seemed a little zesty from the home plate umpire there, if you ask me.
A home plate umpire was, I think, annoyed that the Phillies were so bad and they were making him stay there so long. It was completely nonsense. I did love Schwarber sort of waving him off. But, like, grow a pair, umpire. Sometimes you make a mistake and the players are going to be upset about that. Did he call you any names before you threw him out? My guess is no. Because he's a nice guy and he doesn't do that. So you just threw him out because of hand motion on something you screwed up on. Then again, I feel like it's not, I would not understand if Kyle really, really wanted to not be in the game anymore.
Just say, I'm done. I'm not even really playing the field and I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, like, just like, you know what? I really do need to go inside. I'm tired of being out here. I am 30 or 40 years old and I do not need this.
It's understandable. I don't know, Justin, what do you think?
I read Doug Harvey's book a couple weeks ago, if you're familiar. Doug Harvey, the umpire,
yeah.
Who they said his nickname was God. I think somebody called him that once, and he really liked that. And when you read his book, you see that he definitely views himself as God and super infallible. As
you know, you can't spell Doug.
Goes.
You can't spell Doug without G-O-D.
He would love that. I would guarantee he would love that statement. He would probably put that on. He would probably put that on any reprinted editions of his book. Honestly, and I bring him up because I'm not able to. I'm not looking at the quote, but he has a quote in there that was like, "Yeah, you know, the important thing for an umpire to do is to believe he is right, even when he knows he is wrong." And you read things like that and you go back and you read them again and you're like, this is the man they called God. He has plenty of other opinions that are, let's say, reflective of his age demographic. But regardless.
Fabulous.
That kind of thinking really shines a light on some of the umpiring you saw from guys, certainly in Doug Harvey's era as well. He speaks very highly of a young umpire named Joe West who was coming up behind him. So, again, judgment. Regardless, I think that's something that you see on display still in baseball to this day, that the umpires will still, you know, even as much as we try to replace them with instant replay and they kind of, you know, they get a little more pushed further and further out of the game, they're still going to find moments to tell you, no, I am in charge, and you can't play the game without me. And that is a moment where, yeah, Alan Porter, I think it was, he's been around for a while, was the home plate umpire today, and he just, yeah, that was a moment where he was like, I'm going to show everyone that I'm in charge of this game today. And then he did it, and you're going to see that. I will always find it infuriating on some level, but as I've gotten older, I've also just come to realize, you know, these like theatrical moments are part of why people watch baseball too. So it's kind of, you're walking a narrow line there when you're like trying to work out these imperfections, when it's also the imperfections that make it a lot more entertaining. And that umpire was very imperfect today. So I don't know. I don't think Kyle's going to make a habit of getting ejected or anything. So
no, if you're going to get chucked, make it in a game you lose by 14 runs. And
think of the last time he got ejected was the game where the umpire was just messing everybody was.
Oh, that's right.
Every call, and he was like, "All right, it's on me." And he was everybody's advocate. He was the other team's advocate about how this guy was messing up. So he does pick his moments to get ejected.
Yes, he does. He is great. He is great. All right. Well, the Phillies lose 2 out of 3, and it is in the midst of a really kind of a rough stretch. They're not facing a lot of really good teams, but they're a lot of time on the road here heading into the All-Star break. This is their fourth road series their third road series in four, and they will go into the All-Star break having played 5 of their last 6 series of the first half on the road. So just 4 home games mixed in between 5 road series. So it's kind of a rough stretch for the Phillies, although they go to Cincinnati now for 3 games against the Reds, and then they finish up with 3 against Detroit. Neither of those teams is great, but the Reds are a spunky team, and Tigers are playing a little bit better. So it's tough to play this many games on the road heading into the All-Star break. But speaking of the All-Star break, the All-Star teams were announced over the weekend, and we had 5 Phillies make the team. Guys, this is pretty good stuff. Brandon Marsh will be starting in the outfield for the National League. Pretty exciting stuff there. Kyle Schwarber was named a reserve. Bryce Harper selected by Rob Manfred as the legend pick.
Literally,
yes, you did. You literally called it, which is interesting given the Manfred Harper blow up in the clubhouse last year. If you remember all that, kind of interesting that he wants goodwill.
Been a move more nakedly saying, "You like me again, don't you? Don't yell at me again.
Don't threaten me and tell me to go do bad things to myself.
Don't make me sick, Mark DeRosa, on you."
That's right. So, and there was a chance that Harper might have been a snub at first base because you knew that Olsen and Freeman were going to be there. But Rob Manfred gets selected as the legend pick. And then you have Christopher Sanchez and Joan Duran also making the team. Really just one snub, and that's Zach Wheeler, who now has a lower ERA than Christopher Sanchez, interestingly enough. But I still think there's a chance Wheeler gets in. Like, if Mizorowski can't pitch, and they're going to need another starter. And my guess is Zach Wheeler is probably the first one up to get to the game. So my guess is they'll get a 6th guy. My guess is Zach Wheeler will be on the roster if he wants to be. If he wants to be. And I think Zach Wheeler does. I think he loves this kind of stuff. I think he's trying to build a resume. That dude wants to be in the Hall of Fame. I get it. I think he's going to be kind of on the bubble. So get these all-star berths, get these all-star games. His agent was blasting the voting on Monday. That story came out.
Beautiful. I'm just like, agents, like every agent, a lot of agents are lawyers, and lawyers love writing that type of invective. It's beautiful. You just get to open up the doors and be like, this is what I really think.
Yeah. So
I liked how you just kept calling him boring when they were like, "Well, why don't people appeal to Zach Wheeler?" And he's like, "Because he's boring." And you're just imagining like Zach Wheeler standing there like, "Hey, man." And he's like, "No, I got this, Zach. Relax." He was saying that in Matt Gelb's story on The Athletic. He was like, he's boring. He just goes out and does his job. And he's the best pitcher in baseball the last 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, honestly. He goes out and does his job. And for whatever reason, he's just seen as this not marketable player by the game. And yeah, keeps saying like he's just he stays home on Friday and he darns his socks. Yeah, all right. He doesn't know how to do the Rubik's Cube, but he keeps trying. All right, it's whatever. But you got to be able to put him out there because he's a really good pitcher. And poor Zach Wheeler, yeah, he's got to stand there and hear his own agent say that in front of everybody.
I mean, standing there right behind him, holding a cold glass of milk, hey, just right listening to
well,
it.
Well, lukewarm.
You know?
It's not
lukewarm.
You know, Saturday night.
Lukewarm. Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's the only difference, I would say, like, Schwarber does exciting things like hit home runs, and that makes him an exciting player. You know, something I know we learned from the, the good pitcher, the super outstanding World Series pitcher era of the Phillies is that I lost where I was going. Ugh!
Well, that's all right. I mean, I think that's all right. I mean, I think what you're saying is Zach, you know, Zach Wheeler, I get it. He's not like a guy you put the billboard up, even in Philadelphia. Like, you don't see him on TV. He's not interested in, you know, selling cars or anything like that. But I don't think he got snubbed because he's boring or he's not popular. There is an incredible number of National League starters this year who are deserving to go. And you have this, you do have the rule that every starter, you know, every team has to have a player, you know, and one of the easiest ways.
He missed a chunk of time to start.
And he missed
season.
A chunk of time. Yeah, exactly. But I think he'll get there. And I don't think it's going to have anything to do with what the agent said. He's probably next in line. And given the fact it's in Philadelphia and he's a Philly, probably gives him, you know, special dispensation or whatever it is. So I would expect to see Zach Wheeler at the All-Star game. And I think he will absolutely go if he's asked to go. The other piece of news. Well, first of all, Justin, Brandon Marsh is a starter. I got to let you just have a few minutes on this. Your guy. No one could have seen this kind of a season coming from him where he has emerged as a star in Major League Baseball. I didn't see it coming. And so you got Brandon Marsh here now starting in the National League All-Star outfield. Just incredible.
Brandon Marsh going to hit 20 home runs this year. I mean, yeah,
easy.
That's the part that's really going to makes it seem like this was difficult to predict. I did feel like for a long time he had another gear. To discover, and obviously his big fight was hitting lefties, and you know there was a point in time where people said, oh yeah, he can do it, and then he got some more chances against lefties, and he couldn't really do it. Then he had that worst month of any player I've ever seen ever, and then he came back from that, and he's been able to take whatever they've been teaching him, and he's been very receptive to it. I think he's very coachable. I think he really listens, and I mean you just. Think about everything you've seen from Brandon Marsh this year, not just like the offense, which has obviously been staggering, but his like reliability in the outfield, the way he hypes up his teammates, the pitch perfect response he gave to the question about getting pulled from that game for Edmundo Sosa by Don Mattingly. I mean, there's a ton. He's like a model player this year.
Yeah.
For the Philly. There's just no aspect of him that concerns you at this moment in time. And yeah, you should be starting in the All-Star game. And maybe he never has another season like this for the rest of his life. But this was totally worth rewarding, especially this year with the game in Philadelphia. I think you might have had a little more uphill of a battle if the game was happening elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I think people were excited to vote for him. And that's what I was trying to articulate, you know, in past versions of this conversation, which was just that people are excited. They want to vote for a guy who is A, deserving to go, and B, has never been, is like new, a new guy to vote
yeah.
for. The amount of times I rolled my eyes voting for like a Dodger or something while on the All-Star ballot was just like yawn. Like, do I want to be disingenuous or do I want to vote for the guy who, because there's some pretty serious drop off between candidates this year at certain positions
yeah, there is.
In certain leagues. But yeah. Brandon Marsh never made that selection hard. You didn't have to close your eyes or squint at his numbers. He's just up there, man. He's doing things a Phillies outfielder hasn't done for 50 years, statistically. That is absolutely worth rewarding like this with an All-Star game. He is going to be exactly the kind of player you want playing in the All-Star game because he's going to embrace it and have so much fun. The camera's going to love him. He's going to be running around like a dog that got on the field. it's perfect. It's exactly what should have happened, and I'm glad it did. And I'll tell you something else. I got fed an Instagram ad where somebody was selling a Marsh shirt that said Marsh Thing, where he was kind of turning into Swamp Thing, which was also the nickname I tried to get started
with.
Yes,
for him, it is.
Which someone else, I'm not going to say, you know, I never copyrighted it or anything. So, you know, whatever. I'm just glad that it's out there and that it's seemingly happening in places other than this podcast. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Great Beautiful. Year to be Brandon Marsh. Great year to vote for Brandon Marsh. It's going to be a fun All-Star game with Brandon Marsh.
Yeah. Good job, Phillies fans, making that happen. All right, let's wrap up with some final thoughts. Liz, any quick final thoughts before we finish?
Absolutely. According to everyone's favorite baseball reporter, Bob Nightingale, 7 MLB umpires are, I don't know, I think, Justin, maybe you had this one as well, but 7 MLB umpires are taking buyout offers. They are old guys who have been around for a while, and this was apparently the only way to make them retire. And there's some names that you'll be happy to hear on this one. We've got C.B. Buckner, Laz Diaz, Brian O'Nora, Lance Barksdale, Marvin Hudson, Tony Randazzo, and Andy Fletcher. We have all been angry at all of those guys for various reasons over the years, and now they'll be gone. Retiring with a buyout offer and making more money than any of us.
Bye, C.B. Bye, C.B. That'll be a rough one. It's time.
It's
Justin.
Time.
Final
Three
thoughts,
quick
Justin.
Notes.
Yeah.
Phillies announced the passing of former reliever Al Holland.
Oh, that was a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very sad to read about. There are some very funny, if you ever have the chance, very funny stories about Al Holland. Terrific all-star with the Phillies, 83, came back to training camp in 84 and was like significantly overweight. And there's this whole sequence of events that, like, with the reporters, with his manager, Pat Corrales at the time, like, there's just John Quinn was involved. It's just, if you ever have the chance, it's a very funny series of events. Also,
I'm so ready for that.
Same Bob Nightingale story. He mentions Alex Cora is still expected to join the Phillies after rejecting their offer to replace Rob Thompson. So, you know. Headline news.
Guess we
know who's going to be the Phillies manager next year. And lastly, we've got the All-Star Game Dirty Inning is up at the Hit and Season Patreon. You can hear for about 85 minutes an episode about the 1996 All-Star Game, the Phillies' terrible month of June in 1996, leading up to the All-Star Game in 96. Ricky Pitalico's in there. Joe Carter's in there. The Braves are all over it. It's a really fun episode, so go listen to it today.
And Kelsey Grammer sung the national anthem. So, I mean, it was it had everything. It had everything for everyone. I wrote about it for The Good Fight back in 2014. It's going to be making an appearance again on the site this coming week. So look for that. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hit and Season. Just a reminder, if you like to watch podcasts, this will be up on the WHYY YouTube channel. So make sure that you check us out over there. But I would also encourage you to tell your friends and family members about this podcast, because we're coming up on the All-Star break. The Phillies are going to be the center of the baseball universe, so you're going to want to make sure to check us out. We're going to have lots of great stuff coming up here over the next couple of weeks as we get ready for this All-Star game at Citizens Bank Park. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hit and Season.